So I want to invite any children or youth who'd like to come forward at this time to come forward for the conversation with me this morning. And hopefully that'll free up some spaces for people who are standing in the back looking for a place to sit as well. Looks like there's a hand up over here because there's some spaces over here, and there are plenty of spaces up front. Don't be shy. Now's a good time to come on up. Yay! Exactly. How did you know that I was going to talk about that? Okay, so you know what I want to talk about this morning? This morning I'm going to be talking about family with the whole church. And you all have families, and you didn't know that, though, I was going to talk about family. But one of the things I think of when I think of families, and I think of friends, and I think of our church community, I think of all of those people as being sort of like your cheering section. What do people who are part of your cheering section do? Do you have an idea what they might do? Abby, give it to us. All right. They might do that for you. Are any of you part of sporting teams? Yes, a few of you are part of sporting teams. And do your parents, oh my goodness, soccer, you do a little of this, a little of that. And you do soccer. And when you do soccer and it's pouring down rain, are there any people in your family who go anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah? And what do they do? Do they still cheer for you even though they're holding the umbrella? This is the part I want to know. No? Yeah? Still? Because I think we all need people that we feel like, even when we're having a hard day, we kind of know that they're cheering for us, that they're rooting for us, that they're part of our cheering section, even when they're not making loud noises, even when they're not actually cheering. So I thought we could do two things when we're up here together today. So first, I thought we could do a big cheer for everybody in our congregation who helps make everything go around here, like building passages to yurts and mowing the lawn and serving great soup and all of that. I think that we need to be the cheering section for all the people who do, which basically is everybody here. So let's do one big cheer for everybody in our congregation. Cheers for the congregation. Woo! Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Woo! That's right. Every time. And being in the choir, too. And sometimes you have to go, woo, or like do things like that for people to really hear you. And then there are other times that you're part of someone's cheering section, and you kind of do it in a way that's not so loud. But I'm wondering if somebody could show me how you can look, Jenny's going to show me what it kind of looks like to be part of somebody's cheering section without being really loud about it. Yeah, well, there's that, and there's the fact that sometimes in sign language, people who can't hear, they don't applaud, so they do their hands like this, so you could do this to cheer people on. And Athena's showing that sometimes you can give people a thumbs up. You can just, yeah. And sometimes, just a minute, let me finish one more thing. And sometimes, oh, he's going to show. Sometimes you can do apparently like a dance to show people that you can raise the roof for them, I guess. I don't know. You can do all kinds of things. So sometimes I think you can be someone's cheering section just when they look at you and you can tell they're having a hard day. You look at them and what do? For them? Big one of these. Like, I'm here for you. A hip hip hooray! That's right. That too. So you can smile at people. You can show them that you care. You can snap. Julia's saying you could snap for them. Give them a little snap. But it's really important to know that there are people in your life, not just your parents, not just your brothers or sisters, not just people like your teachers, but all these kinds of grown-ups who are here who are part of your cheering section. So we hope that when you have exciting things to share, or even when you've had a bad week and you need somebody to say, gosh, I'm really sorry to hear that you had a hard week, that you'll tell us. Right, grown-ups? Okay, that's right, because we are part of your cheering section. All right, so let's hold hands and have our prayer time to send you off to your classes. I'm going to hold David's hand here. Spirit of life and of love, we give thanks for our cheering sections, for the loud roar of the crowd, for the quiet smiles that convey love and care when we're having a hard week, for the cheering sections that we're related to and those that we're not, for the communities of our lives that hold us and sustain us. We give thanks. Blessed be, and amen. Thanks for coming to talk with me. We're going to make a nice arches for you, and you're going to go off to your classes. Will you join me now in that place of reverence and honesty, that place of stillness and clarity? Will you please pray with me? Spirit of life and of love, holy presence known to us by many names, or presence sometimes not known to us at all. We pause in the midst of our day-to-day comings and goings to reflect on our living. What have we made of ourselves? What have we made of this precious and brief time we have to be alive? How have we been shaped by those closest to us? And how do we struggle with the legacy that some of those members of our family have given us? Families are so complicated, so beautiful, so difficult, so loving, so cruel. How do we hold all that that one word evokes? Help us to hold all that that one word holds. For this life, for fathers and mothers, grandmothers and grandfathers, cousins and aunts and uncles, for all of the complicated people who have made us who we are, we lift our hearts in prayer this day. Amen. Well, this morning's message is a doozy. I always feel when I choose family as a topic for a sermon that I know there are some people who will not come that Sunday. And I say that quite earnestly and quite seriously. And that's okay, because I still think family is a topic that a preacher ought to preach on at least once every couple of years. This morning I have two readings to share with you. The first is an excerpt from an amazing book, a tome. It's like this thick. I am not anywhere near through all of it, but it's an amazing book called Far From the Tree, written by Andrew Solomon, who's best known for writing a book about depression. But he wrote this book, Far From the Tree. You know the adage, an apple doesn't fall far from the tree. The book is actually about those who do fall quite far from the tree, and how hard that can be on families trying to figure out what that means. And by the kinds of things that he's talking about in this book, he's talking about children who are so different from their parents as to, he has a whole chapter on dwarfism, on people who are deaf, born to hearing parents, and on criminal offenders, born to parents who are not. He begins the book with these words. There is no such thing as reproduction. When two people decide to have a baby, they engage in an act of production. And the widespread use of the word reproduction, with its implication that two people are braiding themselves together, is at best a euphemism to comfort prospective parents before they get in over their heads. In the subconscious fantasies that make conception look so alluring, it is often ourselves that we would like to see live forever, not someone with a personality of his or her own. Having anticipated the onward march of our selfish genes, many of us are unprepared for children who present unfamiliar needs. Parenthood abruptly catapults us into permanent relationship with a stranger. We must love them for themselves, not for the best of ourselves in them. And that is a great deal harder to do. Loving our own children is an exercise for the imagination. Second reading is, and you'll have to accept my apologies for how intense this poem is, but I love it. It's a poem by Jaredith Marin entitled Family Reunion. The divorced mother and her divorcing daughter, the about-to-be ex-son-in-law and the ex-husband's adopted son, the divorcing daughter's child, who is the step-nephew of the ex-husband's adopted son, everyone cordial, the ex-husband's second wife friendly to the first, warm to the divorcing daughter's child's great-grandmother, who was herself long ago divorced. Everyone grown used to the idea of divorce. Almost everyone has separated from the landscape of childhood. Collections of people in cities are divorced from clean air and stars. Toddlers in daycare are parted from working parents. School children from the assumption of unbloodied day-long safety. Old people die apart from all they've gathered over time and in strange beds. Adults grow estranged from a God evidently divorced from history. Most are cut off from their own histories, each of which waits like a child left at daycare. What if you turned back for a moment and put your arms around yours? Yes, you might be late for work. No, your history doesn't smell sweet like a toddler's head. But look at those small round wrists, that short-legged comical walk. Caress your history. Who else will? Promise to come back later. Pay attention when it asks you simple questions. Where are we going? Is it scary? What happened? Can I have more now? Who is that? Complexity of family. As I sat down to write this sermon on Friday, so much coursed through me. The acknowledgement that families and family life is fraught territory to talk about was first. Not just because we all have complex emotional history and even present with our families, but because definitions of family are being shaped and reshaped as I wrote this sermon. It is hard to do, as the poet suggests, to turn and throw our arms around the complicated muddle that is our family history and perhaps our family present. Yet this morning, that is precisely what I want to invite us to consider. What would it look like to embrace what we can of our family history? Even, and perhaps especially, if that means also seeing what needs to be let go of. How do we perpetuate or undo the legacy of our family. The second thing that occurred to me as I sat down to write was the famous quotation from Tolstoy, from Anna Karenina. You've probably heard it. All happy families are alike. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. The truth, it seems to me, of what Tolstoy wrote is that we humans share common sources of both happiness and sadness. And the ways in which family life, both the family life of our childhood and the family life of our present adulthood, contribute, share some common threads of happiness and sadness. I thought right away of the paradox of family. It's kind of amazing when you think about it. So much of who we are, our very sense of identity, is rooted in our family. And yet, who we have as family is quite accidental. This unchosen element of our existence, is also essential and defining. How could that be? We don't ask for or handpick the set of parents that we receive, and yet so much of who we are is informed and altered by who they are and how they parent. And that's not even getting into the complicated web of extended family, because of course we're impacted by cousins and aunts and uncles and all those other folks as well. At the beginning of his book, Andrew Solomon talks about two major forms that our identity takes. Horizontal, what he calls horizontal identity, and vertical identity. Vertical identities, he said, are those identities which are passed down from generation to generation through both DNA and cultural norms. Some examples of vertical identities are ethnicity, for example. Children of color are usually born to adults of color. Language, for the most part, is a vertical identity. If you grow up in a Greek family, you speak Greek. And then he said that both religion and nationality are moderately vertical identities because, as we all know, many of you sitting here, children sometimes shift the religion from the religion of their childhood, and immigrants shift their nationality sometimes. Then he speaks to us about horizontal identities. Horizontal identities are those which are inherent or acquired traits that we do not share with our parents. And when it comes to these horizontal identities, Solomon says, it's often in finding others who share that horizontal identity, usually a peer group, that we come to fully understand that identity. Gayness, for example, is a horizontal identity, as is usually physical disability and often psychopathy. Those are horizontal kinds of identity, as is autism and intellectual ability. As I read through his description of these vertical things that we get from generation to generation and these horizontal identities that are distinctly our own and different from our family, I kept thinking about how these two streams of identity, when they collide, make the community that we have beyond our family even more important. It also made clear to me why our family connections often feel like this odd push-pull relationship. It's like you can hear in these different identities intersecting, I am part of you, but I am also my own. I am inextricably tied to you, and yet I am a person of my own creation. Coming to grips with these vertical connections from our families and then nurturing community, both to help us avoid both to help us hold those vertical pieces that we struggle with and to embrace those horizontal pieces of who we are is hugely important. When I was growing up, the difference between me and the maternal side of my family was obvious. Quite literally, I would spend time with my mother's family, and I didn't look like anyone else. I would walk through a grocery store with my grandfather, balding head, gray hair, glasses like this, taller than me, didn't look a thing like me, and people would stare. How could these two people possibly be connected, nonetheless related to each other? So in a way, when I would spend time with that side of my family, it was a vertical identity issue of ethnicity. We were related, after all. It just didn't look like it. But what I had to find, however, in order to more fully grasp that component of my being, was a horizontal community of other mixed-race people. So when I was in college, I helped create and form a group of people of multiracial identity and transracially adopted people. We thought we were clever. We named the group I Checked Other. We shared stories and we found so much that we had to say that we didn't even need to explain to one another. We simply got it. And we each found a way to help each other sort of coalesce our vertical and horizontal identities. And I think all of us need that. We need to coalesce around some sense of peace between who we are here and who we are here, or we will risk feeling fragmented or angry or bewildered by the ways in which we are unlike our family and share so much in common with our circle of friends. Now, I can't do a sermon about family without acknowledging the tragic and horrible situations of familial abuse or neglect or emotional betrayal. Much of what I have said so far about vertical and horizontal identity, well, it applies in those situations as well, but seems somehow completely inadequate. I have no easy answers or healing words to offer that wouldn't seem trite or dismissive in their brevity. All I can do is to acknowledge the lasting pain and the damage that these family ties leave in their wake. I remember vividly when I was in college running into one of my best friends on the quad of the campus. She was in tears, hysterical, really. And I asked her why. And she said she had just remembered in a way she never fully had before an incident that she had had with her mother growing up. Her mother was an alcoholic, frequently out of control, never particularly helpful as a parent. But what my friend had remembered that day was a particular moment of tugging at her mother's bathrobe, trying to get her attention as a young girl of maybe 7 or 8 years old. And her mother pulling out of the pocket of her robe her bottle of vodka and hitting her across the face with it. We cannot make up for experiences like this. All we can do is try to pick up the pieces, move forward as best we can, making friends who love us through all of the challenges. Clearly, therapy helps, and I understand now how many people have been scarred by family dysfunction of one sort or another. That story is just one of many heartbreaking stories that have challenged for me the very notion of what a family is supposed to be. What is a family if it hurts you? What is a family if it undermines your very sense of self and who you are in the world? Isn't a family supposed to do otherwise? I have quite a few friends who have been left with a lifetime of work to get through and get by, to get to the point of not only survival, nonetheless trying to thrive in their lives. Family is complicated. So I've said a lot this morning, and yet you might think, where's the conclusion to be drawn here? What is the message in this morning's message? Clearly, I've said something about a strong need for imagination and empathy. Toward the end of Andrew Solomon's introductory chapter, which is really about his own life, in fact, that chapter is called simply Son, he writes, and I quote, "I have the horizontal experience of being gay and a vertical one of the family that produced me, and the fact that they are not fully integrated no longer seems to undermine either. In working on this book and finding out the stories of others, I realized that I had demanded that my parents accept me, but had resisted accepting them. For some parents of children with horizontal identities, in the end, they realize they were, in fact, falling in love with someone they didn't yet know enough to want. As such parents look back, they see how every stage of loving their child has enriched them in ways they never would have conceived, ways that are incalculably precious." End quote. I have long thought that one of the hardest things for a parent to do was to let go of their own vision of who their child is or will become. The imagined vision that the parent has before their child was born or adopted, they have to let go of that vision of who this person will be to allow the real child, the actual person, to emerge. I thought of that for my parents in relation to my gayness and my ethnicity. My parents, for quite a while, God love them, had a really hard time putting away this vision of me as this straight person who was going to be married to a man and have 2.5 kids and a white picket fence. They had to put that away in order for Shauna, as she really is, to be seen. And now I look at my role as parent more than as daughter, more and more these days, and I wonder, how well will I do at offering our two children the space? How will I do at offering a wide imaginative field for them to fully inhabit on their own terms? Can I empathize with and love fully the parts of my children that are very separate and very different and distinct from my way of being? Can we all do that in looking back at our family history and forward at the potential futures of the young people in our families? I was speaking with my uncle a week ago about the latest in a long line of family complexities in my own family, and he shared with me a quotation from Henry Ford. "Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right." Whether we think we can or we think we can't throw our arms around our complicated family histories, we are indeed right. And we may have to do so anyway. Think about it. The poet said, What if you turned back for a moment and put your arms around yours? Yes, you might be late for work. No, your history doesn't smell sweet like a toddler's head. But look at those small round wrists, that short-legged comical walk. Caress your history. Who else will? So that's my prayer for us. Because, friends, whether you think you can or you think you can't, caress your history. You may be right, but you may have that work to do anyway. May we be able to encompass all our family has meant and will come to mean. May we be able to hold it with as much grace and mercy, love and compassion as we can muster. And may we do so while holding our health, our wholeness, our well-being at the forefront. May it be so. And amen.